stopping when I noticed the heat. The heat and a glow that made a silhouette of Gorgoth despite the daylight, as if he were huddled over a fierce campfire. I edged around and to the side. Gog lay coiled like a babe in the womb, every inch of him white hot, as if the light of the Builder's Sun were bleeding through him. Even Gorgoth had to shuffle back. As I watched, the boy's skin shaded down through colours seen in iron in the forge, hot orange, then the duller reds. I took a step toward him, and he opened his eyes, white holes into the centre of a sun. He gasped, the inside of his mouth molten, then curled more tightly. At times, fire danced across his back, running along his arms, then guttering out. It took 10 minutes for Gog to cool, so that his old colours returned, and a man could stand beside him. At last he lifted his head and grinned. "More!" "You've had enough, lad," I said. I didn't know what the Builder's Sun had woken as it echoed through him. But from what I'd seen, better it went back to sleep. I looked back at the clouds still rising above Mount Honus, and the countryside burning for miles around. "I think it's time to go home, lads." Chapter 36, 4 years earlier.
"It can't be done," said the Nuban.
"Few things worth having can be got easily," I said.
"It can't be done," he said. "Not by anyone who expects to live 5 minutes past the act."
If a suicidal assassin were all it took, then the 100 would be the dozen by now. My own father had survived several attempts in which the would-be killer had no interest in escape. No one with a claim to the Empire throne is that easy to bring to an end. The Nuban turned in the saddle to frown at me. He'd given up asking how a child knew such things. I wondered how long before he gave up telling me it couldn't be done. I nudged my horse on. The towers of the Count's castle hadn't seemed to get any closer over the last half hour. "We need to find the Count's strongest defence," I said. "The protection that he most relies upon. The one upon which his faith rests." The Nuban frowned again.
"Seek out your enemy's weakness," he said. "Then take your shot."
He patted the heavy crossbow strapped across his saddlebags. "But you've already told me it can't be done," I said.
"Repeatedly."
I pulled my cloak tight against the evening wind. The man I had taken it from had been a tall one, and it hung loose about me. "So you're just planning the most sensible way to lose." The Nuban shrugged. He never argued for the sake of being right. I liked that in him. The weakest spot in a good defence is designed to fail. It falls, but in falling it summons the next defence, and so on. It's all about layers. At the end of it all, you'll find yourself facing the thing you sought to avoid all along. Only now you're weaker, and it's forewarned. The Nuban said nothing. The blackness of his face impenetrable in the dying light. "Surprise is our only real weapon here. We sidestep that process of escalation. We cut straight to the heart of the matter. And the heart is what we want to cut." We rode on, and at length the towers grew closer and taller and loomed until the castle gates yawned before us. A sprawl of buildings pooled before them like vomit. Taverns and tanneries, hovels and whorehouses.
"Renna's shield is a man named Corian."
The Nuban twitched his nose at the stench as the horses threaded a path to the gates.
"A magician from the Horse Coast, they say. Certainly a good counselor. He has the Count guarded by mercenaries from his homeland. Men with no families to threaten, and an honor code that keeps them true.
So, what could get us an invitation to see this Corian, I wonder?
The queue at the gates moved in fits and starts, but never above a snail's pace. 10 yards ahead of us, a peasant with an ox in tow argued with a guard in the Count's livery.
Is he really a magician, do you think?
I watched the Nuban for his answer. The horse coast is the place for them.
The peasant seemed to have won his case and moved on with his ox into the outer yard where the market stalls would still be set out. By the time we reached the gate, a light rain had started to fall. The guard's plume drooped somewhat in the drizzle, but there was nothing tired about the look he gave us.
What's your business in the castle?
Supplies. The Nuban patted his saddlebags.
Out there.
The guard nodded to the sprawl before the gates.
You'll find all you want out there.
The Nuban pursed his lips. The castle market would have the best goods. But that line wasn't going to carry us far. We'd need a better reason before the Count's man was going to let a road-worn Nuban mercenary across his master's threshold.
Give me your bow, I said to the Nuban.
He frowned.
You're going to shoot him?
The guard laughed, but there wasn't an ounce of humour in the Nuban. He was getting to know me. I held out my hand. The Nuban shrugged and hauled his crossbow up from where it hung behind his saddle. The weight of it nearly took me to the ground. I had to grab the bow in both hands and cling to my mount with my legs, but I managed the feat without too great a loss of dignity. I offered it to the guard.
Take this to Corian, I said. Tell him we're interested in selling.
Irritation, scorn, amusement. I could see them all fighting to put the next words on his tongue. But he raised a hand for the weapon even so. I pulled the bow back as the guard reached up.
Be careful. Half the weight is enchantments.
That lifted his brow an inch. He took it gingerly, eyeing the iron faces of Nuban gods. Something he saw there seemed to set aside his objections.
Watch these two, he said,
calling another man from the shadows of the gatehouse. And off he went, holding the Nuban's crossbow before him, as if it might bite, given half a chance. The drizzle thickened into a steady downpour. We sat on our horses, letting it all soak in. I thought about vengeance, about how it wouldn't give me back what had been taken, about how I didn't care. Hold to a thing long enough, a secret, a desire, maybe a lie, and it will shape you. The need lay in me. It could not be set aside. But the Count's blood might wash it out. The night came, the guards lit lanterns in the gatehouse, and in niches along the wall of the entryway. I could see the teeth of two portcullises waiting to drop if some foe should storm the entrance while the gates stood wide. I wondered how many of Father's soldiers would have died here if he had sent his armies to avenge my mother. Perhaps it was better this way. Better that I come calling. More personal. She was my mother, after all. Father's soldiers had their own mothers to be worrying about. The rain dripped from my nose, ran cold down my neck, but I felt warm enough. I had a fire inside me.
He'll see you.
The guard had returned. He held a lantern up. His plume lay plastered to the back of his helm now, and he looked as tired himself.
Jake, get their horses. Nadar, you can walk these boys in with me.
And so we entered Count Renner's castle on foot, as wet as if we'd swum a moat to get there. Corian had his chambers in the West Tower, adjacent to the main keep where the Count held court. We followed a winding stair, gritty with dirt. The whole place had an air of neglect.
Should we give up our weapons?
I asked. I caught the whites of the Nuban's eyes as he shot me a glance.
Our guard just laughed. The man behind me tapped the knife at my hip.
Going to jab Corian with this little pig sticker, are you, boy?
I didn't have to answer. Our guard pulled up before a large oak door, studded with iron bolts. Somebody had burned a complex symbol into the wood, a pictogram of sorts. It made my eyes crawl. The guard rapped on the door, two quick hits.
Wait here.
He thrust his lantern into my hands. He gave me a brief look, pursed his lips, then pushed past the Nuban to head back down the stairs.
Nadar, with me.
Both men were out of sight, behind the curve of the stair, before we heard the sound of a latch being raised. Then nothing. The Nuban set his hand to the hilt of his sword. I flicked it away. Shaking my head, I knocked again on the door.
Come.
I thought I'd faced down all my fears, but here was a voice that could melt my resolve with one word. The Nuban felt it too. I could see it in every line of him, poised to flee.
Come, Prince of Thorns. Come out of your hiding. Come out into the storm.
The door fell away, eaten by darkness. I heard screaming, awful screaming, the sort you get from prey with a broken back as it crawls to escape the hunter's claws. Maybe it was me, maybe the Nuban. And then I saw him. Chapter 37. The castle red left no ruins to gaze upon. All we had were the ruins of the mountain on which it had stood. We beat the most hasty of retreats and made thanks that the wind blew against us, not chasing us to share the smoke and taint of Geleth. That night we slept cold, and none amongst us had an appetite, not even Burlo. The road from the castle red to the tall castle is a long one, longer in the coming back than in the going. For one thing, on the way out we rode. On the way back, we had to walk. And most of those miles back pointed down. Given the choice, I'd rather climb a mountain than come down one. The downslope puts a different kind of hurting in your legs, and the gradient pulls on you every step, as if it's steering you, as if it's calling the shots. Going up, you're fighting the mountain.
Damn, but I missed that horse, I said. A fine piece of horse flesh,
Macon nodded and spat from dusty lips.
Have the king's stable master train you another. I'm sure there's not a paddock in Ancreth without it has at least one of Gerard's bastards.
He was a lustful one, I'll give you that. I hawked and spat. My armor chafed, and the metal held the heat of the late afternoon sun, sweat trickling underneath.
It doesn't feel right, though, Macon said. The most convincing victory in memory, and all we have to show for it is a lack of horses. I've had more loot from a peasant hut,
Wright called out from back down the line.
Christ bleeding. Don't start little Reiki off, I said. We're rich in the coin that counts the most, my brothers. We return laden in victory.
There indeed was a currency I could spend at court. Everything is for sale at the right price. A king's favour, a succession, even a father's respect. And that's another thing that made those returning miles longer than the going ones. Not only did I have to carry myself, my armour, my rations, but I had a new burden. It's hard to carry a weight of news with none to tell, and days ahead before you can release it. Good news weighs just as heavy as bad. I could imagine myself back at court, boasting of my victory, rubbing noses in it, a certain stepmother's nose in particular. What would not paint itself on the canvas of my imagination was my father's reaction. I tried to see him shake his head in disbelief. I tried to see him smile and stand and put his hand on my shoulder. I tried to hear him thank me, praise me, call me son. But my eyes went blind, and the words I heard were too faint and deep for distinction. The brothers had little to say on the return journey, feeling the holes left in our ranks, haunted by the space where the Nuban should be. Gog, on the other hand, bubbled over with energy, running ahead, chasing rabbits, asking question after question.
"Why is the roof blue, Brother Jorg?" he asked.
He seemed to think the outside world was just a bigger cave. Some philosophers agree with him. There were other changes too. The red marks on Gog's hide had shaded to a fiercer red, and the nightly campfires fascinated him. He would stare into the flames, entranced, edging closer moment by moment. Gorgoth discouraged the interest, flicking the child into the shadows, as if the attraction worried him. The roads became more familiar, the inclines gentle, the fields rich. I walked the paths of my childhood, a golden time, easy days without care, scored by my mother's music and her song, with no sour note until my sixth year. My father had taught me the first of the hard lessons then, lessons in pain and loss and sacrifice. Geleth had been the sum of that teaching. Victory without compromise, without mercy or hesitation. I would thank King Olidan for his instruction and tell him how his enemies had fared at my hands. And he would approve. I thought of Catherine too as we drew nearer, my idle moments filled with her image, with the moments I had spent close enough to touch her. I saw again how the light caught her, how it found the bones of her face, the softness of her lips. We came footsore and road-weary to the heartlands of Ankrath, too deep in our own thoughts even to steal the horses that would ease the last of our journey. I had but to close my eyes, and I would see the new sun rise over Geleth, rise through Geleth, and hear the screams of her ghosts. We saw the tall castle's battlements from the Austin Ridge, with 7 miles still before us to the gates. The sun descended in the west, crimson, racing us to the city.
"We'll be here, Oathjorth?"
Alban asked. He sounded uncertain, as if all his years had yet to teach him that the end justifies the means.
"Heroes?" I shrugged.
"We will be victors, and that's what counts." We walked the last mile in dusk. The guards at the gates of the Low City had no questions for me. Perhaps they recognized their prince, or perhaps they read my look, and some instinct for self-preservation kicked in. We walked through unopposed.
"Brother Kent, why don't you lead the way to the Low Town and find the lads somewhere to drink? The Falling Angel, maybe."
Sir Makin and I would go to court. The remainder of my brothers would find no welcome in the tall castle. With Makin at my side, I set off for the high city, and at last we came to the castle itself. I put fatigue aside when we entered by the triple gate. We crossed the lectern courtyard in the deepest shadows, thrown by a failing sun. By the time we passed the table knights at father's doors, I had a spring in my step. I looked first for Sagius, seeking him at the king's side, then amongst the glitter of the crowd. I let the herald finish our introduction, and still I sought the heathen. I found Catherine beside the queen, one hand on her sister's shoulder, hard eyes for poor Jorg. I let the silence stretch a moment longer.
"Where have you hidden your painted savage, father dear? I did so want to meet the old poisoner of dreams again."
I slid my gaze across the sea of faces one more time.
"Sagius's services to the crown have taken him from our borders."
Father held his face impassive, but I saw the quick glance exchanged between his queen and her sister.
"I'll be sure to look for his return."
So, the heathen had run before me.
"I'm told that you limped back without the forest watch,"
Queen Sarath spoke from father's side, her hands upon the greatness of her belly.
"Are we to assume your losses were total?"
A smile escaped the tight line of her mouth, an exceptionally pretty mouth, it has to be noted. I spared her a small bow, a bow for my half-brother, struggling to claw his way from her womb.
"Lady,
There were losses among the Forest Watch. I cannot deny it. Father inclined his head, as if the crown weighed heavy upon him. Pale eyes watched me from the shadow of his brow.
We will have an account of this rout.
Lord Vincent de Gren. I counted him off on my index finger. An intake of breath hissed through the aristocracy.
Even the watchmaster?
Queen Sarath struggled to her feet.
He has even lost the watchmaster, and this boy seeks our throne.
Lord Vincent de Gren, I resumed my count. I had to push him over the Temis Falls. He vexed me. Codin is the watchmaster now, lowborn, but a sound fellow.
Jed Willocks,
I counted a second finger. Killed in a knife fight over a game of cards. 2 days' march past the Gelleth border. Mattis of Lee, I counted a third finger. Apparently he urinated on a bear by mistake. It seems that the legendary woodcraft of the Forest Watch may be somewhat overstated. And that's it. I held the three fingers at arm's length above my head and turned left, then right, to survey my audience. The losses among my own picked men were similarly grievous, but in our defence, you must consider that the raising of a castle defended by 900 Gelethian veterans is a dangerous undertaking. With 250 lightly armed forest rangers, there is a limit to what can be achieved without casualties.
The coward never reached Castle Red.
The Queen pointed at me, as if anyone would mistake her target. And her voice became a shriek. I smiled and held my peace. Women are apt to lose perspective when fat with child. I saw Catherine try to press Sarath back into her throne.
I ordered you to assault the Castle Red.
Father's words held no hint of anger and carried all the more threat for it. Indeed, I advanced on the throne, leaving Sir Machen in my wake. Bring me Gelleth, you said. A yard separated us, no more. Before the first palace guard thought to raise his crossbow. Father lifted a finger, and we paused, me and the guard sweating in his hauberk. Bring me Gelleth, you said, and you were good enough to grant me the Forest Watch to do it with. I reached into the road sack at my hip, ignoring the crossbows held on me, and the fingers ever tighter on their triggers. Here is Merle Gelethar, Lord of Gelleth, master of the Castle Red. I opened my hand, and dust trickled through my fingers. And here, I drew out a chunk of rock, no bigger than a walnut. Here is the largest stone that remains of the Castle Red. I let the stone fall, dropped into silence. Neither dust nor stone were what I purported, of course, but the truth lay there, on the throne room floor. Merle Gelethar was dust on the wind, and his castle rubble. We killed them all. Every man in that fortress is dead. I looked to the Queen. Every woman, lady, scullion, drudge, and whore. My eyes fell to her belly. Every child, every babe in cradle. I raised my voice. Every horse and dog, every hawk and every dove. Each rat and down to the last flea. Nothing lives there. Victory does not come in half measures. Father lurched to his feet. In one pace, I stood almost nose to nose with him. I couldn't read what his eyes held, but the old fear had left me, as if it too had trickled from my hands. Give me my birthright. I kept all colour from the words, though my jaw ached from the strain of it. Let me lead our armies, and I will take the empire and make it whole once more. Set aside the heathen and his plans. I glanced toward the new queen at that. I should have kept my eyes on him, should have remembered where I got my mean streak. I felt a sharp pain under my heart. It made me bite off my sentence, nearly my tongue too. I tasted blood, hot and copper. One step back, two, staggering now. I saw the blade, exposed in Father's hand, when I slipped from it. Is this a dagger I see before me? The quotation bubbled up, and laughter too, breaking out of me, crimson with spittle. I wanted to speak, but for once, words escaped me, leaking away with my life's blood. The throne room swam before me, its architecture no longer certain in the face of such betrayal. Every eye watched my retreat toward the great doors. Their stares lanced me, lords and ladies, princess, queen and king. The legs that had borne me league upon league from Geleth now turned traitor, as if each mile from the ruin of the Castle Red settled upon my shoulders and left me drunk with weariness. He stabbed me. There was a time when I loved my father, a time remembered in dreams or in rare waking moments, like the shadow of a high cloud crossing my mind. There's a laughing face from a year I no longer own, from a season where I was too young to see the distance between us. The face is bearded, fierce, but without threat. Is this a dagger I see before me? My mouth wouldn't frame the joke. The laugh burst from me, and I fell, as if the knife had cut my strings. For an eternity, I lay before them, my cheek to the cold marble. I heard Macon roar. I heard the clatter as he went down beneath too many guards. The slow thud of a heartbeat filled me. When I fell, I saw the blackness of my father's hair. Darker than night, with the faintest sheen of emerald like a magpie's wing.
Take this away.
He sounded weary, the slightest hint of human weakness at the last.
Will he lie by his mother's tomb?
A new voice. The words drew out to fill an age, but somewhere in me they echoed, and I saw their owner. Old Lord Nossa, who bore us on his shoulders. Will and I a lifetime ago. Old Nossa, come to carry me one last time. I heard the answer, too faint and deep for distinction. My eyes went blind. I felt the floor scrape against my cheek, and then no more. Chapter 38. I swallowed darkness, and darkness swallowed me. Without light, without the beat of a heart to count the time, you learn that eternity is nothing to fear. In fact, if they just leave you to it, an eternity alone in the dark can be a welcome alternative to the business of living. Then the angel came. The first glimmers felt like paper cuts on my eyes. The illumination built from a distant pinpoint. Splinters of light lodging in the back of my mind. A dawn came, and in an instant, or an age, darkness fled, leaving no hint of shadow to record its passage.
Jorg.
Her voice flowed through the octaves, an echo of every kind word and every promise fulfilled. Hello? My voice sounded like a cracked reed. Hello? But what do you say to heaven when you meet her? Two syllables, weakness and doubt underwriting both. She opened her arms.
Come to me.
I crouched, naked on a floor, too white for any shadow to dare. I could see the dirt on my limbs, like veins and blood, blood from the wound that killed me, dried and black as sin.
Come.
I tried to look at her. No point in her held constant, as if definition were a thing for mortals, a reduction that her essence would not allow. She wore pale in shades. She had the eyes of everyone who ever cared. And wings, she had those too, but not in white and feathers, rather in the surety of flight. The potential of sky wrapped her. Sometimes her skin seemed to be clouds, moving one across the other, I looked away. I crouched there, a knot of flesh and bone, with only dirt and old blood to define me beneath the scrutiny of her brilliance. Come to me. Arms open, a mother's arms, a lover's, father's, friend's. I looked away, but she drew me still. I felt her breathing. I felt the promise of redemption. I had but to lift my eyes, and she would forgive me. No. Her surprise fluttered between us, a palpitation of the light. I felt tension in the muscles of my jaw, and the bitter taste of anger, hot, at the back of my throat. Here, at last, were things familiar to me. Put aside your pain, Jorg. Let the blood of the Lamb wash your sins away. Nothing false in her. She stood transparent in her concern. The angel held her gifts in open hands. Compassion, love, pity. One gift too many. The old smile twisted on my lips. I stood, nice and slow, head bowed still. The lamb doesn't have enough blood for my sins. May as well hang a sheep for me as a lamb. No sin is too great to repent, she said. There's no evil that cannot be put aside. She meant it too. No lie could pass those lips. That truth, at least, was self-evident. I met her eyes then, and the wash of her love, so deep and so without condition, nearly carried me away. I dug deep and fought her. I manufactured my smile once again, cursing myself for a slack-jawed fool. I left few sins untasted. I took a step toward her. I cursed in church. I coveted my neighbor's ox. I stole it too, roasted it whole, and finished it off with gluttony, a deadly sin, the first of the seven, learned at my mother's breast. The hurt in her eyes hurt me, but I'd lived a life striking blows that cut two ways. I moved around the angel, and my feet stained the floor, leaving bruises that faded in my wake. I coveted my neighbor's wife, and I had her. Murder too, oh yes, murder and more murder. So few sins untasted. If I'd not died so young, I'm sure I'd have met you with a full list. Anger closed my jaw. Any tighter, and my teeth would have exploded. If I'd lived but 5 minutes longer, you could have put patricide at the head of the tally. It can be forgiven. I don't require your forgiveness. Veins of darkness reached across the floor, growing outward from where I stood. Let it go, child. A warmth and a humour ran through her words, so strong it nearly carried me with it. Her eyes stood as windows to a world of things made whole, a place built of tomorrows. It could all be made right. I could taste it, smell it. If she weren't so sure of her success, she'd have had me there and then. I held to my anger, drank from my well of poison. These things are not good things, but at least they're mine. I could go with you, lady. I could take what you offer. But who would I be then? Who would I be if I let go the wrongs that have shaped me? You would be happy, she said. Someone else would be happy. A new Jorg, a Jorg without pride. I won't be anyone's puppy, not yours, not even his. The night crept back, like mist rising from the mire. Pride is a sin too, Jorg, deadliest of the seven. You have to let it go. At last, a hint of challenge in her words. All I needed to give me strength. Have to? Darkness swirled around us. She held out her hands. The dark grew, and her light quailed. Pride? I said, my smile dancing now. I am pride. Let the meek have their inheritance. I'd rather have eternity in shadows than divine bliss at the price you ask. It wasn't true. But to speak otherwise, to take her hand, rather than to bite it, would leave nothing of me, nothing but pieces. Glimmers held her now, glimmers against the velvet blackness. Lucifer spoke thus. Pride took him from heaven, though he sat at God's right hand. Her voice grew faint, the hint of a whisper. In the end, pride is the only evil, the root of all sins.
Pride is all I have.
I swallowed the night, and the night swallowed me. Chapter 39.
He's not dead yet?
A woman's voice, Teuton accent, with a creak of age in it.
No.
A younger woman, familiar, also Teuton.
It's not natural to linger so long,
the older woman said.
And so white. He looks dead to me. There was a lot of blood. I didn't know men had so much blood in them.
Catherine. Her face came to me in my darkness, green eyes and the sculpted angles of her cheekbones. White and cold, she said, her fingers on my wrist.
But there's mist on the mirror when I hold it to his lips.
Put a pillow over his face and be done with it, I say.
I imagined my hands around the crone's neck. That brought a hint of warmth.
I did want to see him die, Catherine said, after what he did to Galen. I would have watched him die on the steps of the throne, with all that blood running down, one step after the next, and been glad.
The king should have slit his throat, finished the job there and then,
the old woman again. She had a servant's tone about her, voicing her opinion in the security of a private place, opinions held back too long and grown bitter in the silence.
It's a cruel man who will take a knife to his only son, Hannah.
Not his only son. Sarath carries your nephew. The child will be born to his due inheritance now.
Will they keep him here, do you think? Catherine said. Will they lay him in his mother's casket, beside his brother?
Lay the whelps with the bitch and seal the room, I say. Hannah!
I heard Catherine move away from me. They'd taken me to my mother's tomb, a small chamber in the vaults. The last time I'd visited, the dust had lain thick, unmarked by footprints.
She was a queen, Hannah, Catherine said.
I heard her brush at something.
You can see the strength in her.
Mother's likeness had been carved into her coffer's marble lid, as if she lay there at rest, her hands together in devotion.
Sarath is prettier, Hannah said.
Catherine returned to my side. Strength makes a queen. I felt her fingers on my forehead. 4 years ago, 4 years ago, I'd touched that marble cheek and vowed never to return. That was my last tear. I wondered if Catherine had touched her face, wondered if she'd stroked the same stone.
Let me end this, my princess. It would be a kindness to the boy. They'll lay him with his mother and the little prince.
Hannah honeyed her voice. She set her hand to my throat, fingers coarse like shark skin.
No.
You said yourself that you wanted to see him die,
Hannah said. She had strength in that old hand. She'd throttled a chicken or three in her time, had Hannah. Maybe a baby once or twice. The pressure built, slow, but sure.
On the steps I did, while his blood was hot, Catherine said. But I've watched him cling to life for so long, with such a slight hold. It's become a habit. Let him fall when he's ready. It's not a wound that can be survived. Let him choose his own time.
The pressure built a little more.
Hannah!
The hand withdrew. Chapter 40. We wrap up our violent and mysterious world in a pretense of understanding. We paper over the voids in our comprehension with science or religion, and make believe that order has been imposed. And for the most of it, the fiction works. We skim across surfaces, heedless of the depths below. dragonflies flitting over a lake, miles deep, pursuing erratic paths to pointless ends. Until that moment, when something from the cold unknown reaches up to take us. The biggest lies we save for ourselves. We play a game in which we are gods, in which we make choices, and the current follows in our wake. We pretend a separation from the wild, pretend that a man's control runs deep, that civilization is more than a veneer, that reason will be our companion in dark places. I learned these lessons in my 10th year, although little of them stayed with me. It took Corian only moments to teach me. The heartbeats in which my will guttered like a candle flame in the wind, and then blew out utterly. I lay with the Nuban, boneless on the stairs. Only my eyes would move, and they followed the old man. He could have looked kindly in a different light. He had something of Tutor Lundist about him, though more gaunt, more hungry. The horror wasn't in his face, or even his eyes, just in the knowing that these were mere skins, stretched taut across all the emptiness in the world. The sight of him, just an old man in a dirty robe, put the kind of fear into me that shame erases from our memories. The fear the rabbit has when the eagle strikes. The kind of fright that makes a nothing of you. The kind of fear that'd make you sacrifice mother, brother, everything and anything you've ever loved, just for the chance to run. Corian shuffled closer and stooped to take my wrist. In one instant, the touch silenced the raw terror that had so unmanned me. As completely as if he'd turned the spigot on a wine barrel, the flow stopped. Without a word, he hauled me into his room. I felt the flagstone scrape my cheek. The chamber held nothing, save for the Nuban's crossbow, propped against the far wall. I imagined Corian closeted here in his empty chamber, a place to leave his old flesh whilst he stared into eternity.
So, Sagus's hunter finally tracked down something with more bite than him, eh?
I tried to speak, but my lips didn't as much as twitch. He knew about the Dream Witch and his hunter. He called me the Thorn Prince. What else did he know?
I know it all, child. The things you know, the secrets you hold, even the secrets you've forgotten.
He could read my mind.
Like an open scroll,
Corian nodded. He turned my head with his boot so that I could see the Nuban's bow once more.
You intrigue me, onerous Jorg Ankrath, he said.
He moved to stand beside the bow.
You're wondering why a man with such power isn't emperor over all the lands.
I was too.
It has to be one of the 100. Nations won't follow monsters like me. They follow a lineage, divine right, the spawn of kings. So we who have taken our power from the places where others fear to reach, we play the Game of Thrones with pieces like Count Renar, pieces like your father, pieces like you, perhaps.
He reached out to touch the bow. The air around it shimmered as if the mouth of a furnace had opened.
Yes, I rather like that idea. Let Sagus have King Olidan. Let him work to bend your father to his will, and I will have the firstborn son.
The fear had sunk low enough to let my anger rise. I pictured the old man dying on a blade, my hand on the hilt.
Let the wilds temper you, and if you weather it, in time the prodigal will return, a viper to his father's bosom. Pawn takes king.
He mimed the chessboard gesture.
You might become something, Briar Prince. A piece to win the game.
Corian took the bow as if it weighed nothing. Raising it to his lips, he whispered a word, too soft for hearing. 5 paces took him to the door, and he set the bow on the steps by the Nuban's head.
a black knight to guard my pawn. And you, boy, you will forget the Count of Renard. Like hell I will. Turn your vengeance anywhere you choose. Share it with the world. Spill some blood. But never return to these lands. Set no foot upon these paths. Your mind will not wander here.
I could only watch him. He came closer. He knelt beside me, took my collar, and drew my face to his. I met his blank eyes. I could feel the horror rising, a flood that would carry me away. And worse, I felt his fingers cold inside my skull, erasing memories, turning aside purpose.
Forget Renard. Take your vengeance to the world. Renard will die. By my hand.
Somehow, my lips spoke the words. But already, he'd taken the conviction from me. I could no longer say how I'd reached the tower, or even name him. The old man smiled. He bent to whisper in my ear. I remember his breath on my neck, and the smell of rot. Then I heard his words, and all reason left me. Worms writhed behind my eyes. Nothing remained of him in my thoughts, just a hole where I couldn't look. Renard became a name without weight, and my hatred a gift for anyone and everyone. I fell through darkness, deafened by my own howling. Unknown hands locked around my throat, and in the darkness, my own hands found a neck to throttle. The grip tightened and tightened again. The screams died to a hiss, a rattle, and then silence. I squeezed. My hands became iron hooks. If I could have squeezed harder, my finger bones would have snapped like dry twigs. I fell through darkness, through silence. Only the hands on my throat, and the throat in my hands, and the hunger for air, my heart beating sledgehammer blows. I fell through years. I've been falling through my life. I hit the ground, hard. My eyes opened. I lay on a stone floor. A purple face stared at me, eyes distended, tongue protruding. Daylight streamed in from a high window. My heart hammered at my breastbone, wanting out. Everything hurt. I saw hands on the neck below that face. My hands. With great effort, I unlocked them. The white fingers had little inclination to obey. Still, the pain swelled in me. I needed something, but couldn't name it. My vision pulsed red, dimming from one moment to the next. I touched a stiff-fingered hand to my neck and found hands there. I didn't recognize the face. A woman? The world grew distant, the pain less. Renard. The name rose through me, and with it, a whisper of strength. The hands that prized the strangler's fingers from my neck didn't feel like mine. Renard. My first breath whistled into me, as if sucked through a reed. Air. I needed air. I choked, heaved, but nothing came, hauled in breaths through a throat gown too narrow for the task. Renard. The purple face belonged to a woman with grey hair. I didn't understand. Renard and Corian. Oh, Jesus, I remembered. I remembered the horror, but it burned pale against the cold fury that ate me now. Corian. For the first time in the 4 years since that night in the tower, I spoke his name. I remembered. I recalled what had been taken, and for the first time in forever, I felt whole. I found the strength to lift myself up on my arms. I was in a chamber in a castle, beside a bed. I'd fallen out of bed, whilst an old woman tried to throttle me. The door shook. Somebody rattled at the latch. Hannah! Hannah! A woman's voice. Somehow I stood before the door opened. Catherine! My voice escaped a bruised throat as a squeak. There she was, beautiful in disarray, mouth half open, green eyes wide. Catherine! I could only get her name out as a whisper, but I wanted to shout. I wanted to scream so many things at once. I understood. I understood the game. I understood the players. I knew what had to be done.
Murderer!
She said. She took a knife from her sash, a sharp bodkin long enough to run a man through.
Your father knew best.
I tried to tell her, but no words would come now. I tried to raise my arms, but I had no strength.
I'll finish what he started, she said.
And all I could do was marvel at the beauty of her. Chapter 41. In a duel, man to man, sword against sword, it can be a lack of skill that gets you killed. Often as not, though, it'll be a matter of luck. Or if it goes on too long, then it'll be the man who tires first that tends to die. In the end, it's about staying power. They should put that on headstones. Got tired. Maybe not tired of life, but at least too tired to hold on to it. In a real fight, and most fights are real, not the artifice of a formal duel, it's fatigue that's the big killer. A sword is a heavy chunk of iron. You swing that around for a few minutes, and your arms start to get ideas of their own about what they can and can't do, even when your life depends on it. I've known times when to lift my sword was the equal of any labour of Hercules, but never before I faced Catherine's knife had I felt so drained.
Bastard!
The fire in her eyes looked fierce enough to burn until the deed was done. I looked for the will to stop her and came up empty. A knife is a scary thing, right enough, held to your throat, sharp and cool. The thought echoed back to me from that night when the dead came up out of their bog pools around the lichway. The glitter along that knife edge as she came at me, the thought of it slicing my flesh, piercing an eye maybe. These are all the sort of thing that might give a man pause, until you realize what they are. They're just ways to lose the game. You lose the game, and what have you lost? You've lost the game. Corian had told me about the game. How many of my thoughts were his? How much of my philosophy was filth from that old man's fingers? I'd swum in the darkness too long. The game didn't seem so important anymore. With the embers of my strength, I raised both arms. I stretched them wide to receive the blow, and I smiled. Something reached out and held her arm. I saw it in her face, twisting there on that perfect brow, wrestling with the rage. Father didn't quite reach the heart, it seems. I managed a hoarse whisper. Perhaps, Aunt, you have a better hand. The knife shook. I wondered if she'd cut live meat before.
You killed her!
The fingers of my right hand closed around something, a heavy, smooth something, on the shelf beside my bed. Her eyes dropped to the old woman's face. I hit her. Not hard. I didn't have the strength. But hard enough to break the vase I'd found. She collapsed without a murmur. She lay in the sapphire pool of her dress, sprawled across the flagstones. Life flowed in my arms once more. It seemed as if my strength began to return the moment she fell. As if a spell were broken.
Kill her, and you'll be free forever.
A familiar voice, dry like paper. Mine or his. Her hair hid her face, auburn on sapphire.
She's your weakness. Cut the heart from her.
I knew it to be true.
Choke her.
I saw my hands, pale on a neck shading into crimson.
Have her.
The voice of the briar, the hook slipped beneath my skin and drew me down to kneel beside her.
Have her. Take what might never be given.
I knew the creed.
Kill her, and you'll be free.
I heard the echo of a distant storm. Catherine's hair ran like silk between my fingers. She's my weakness. My voice now, my lips. One little step, one more death, and nothing would ever touch me again. One little step, and the door on that wild night would close forever. The game would truly be a game, and I would be the player to win it.
Choke her. Have her.
The voice of the briar. A crackle in the mind. A hollow sound. An emptiness. Empty. Her neck felt warm. Her pulse beat under my fingertips.
Kill her, Briar Prince.
I saw the words on thin lips, spoken in an empty chamber.
Kill her.
I saw the lips move again. I saw the blank eyes fixed on eternity.
Kill her.
Corian. For a moment, my hands tightened around Catherine's neck.
I'm coming for you, you old bastard.
I released my grip. A smile twisted those thin lips, a fierce twist. I saw it as the vision faded, those blank eyes, and that twist of a smile. My smile. He had played me. I'd wandered for years with no recollection of him, thinking it my own idea to turn from Renar, thinking the choice a symbol of my strength and purpose, to put aside empty vengeance in favor of the true path to power. And now, on the edge of death, I had recovered what was taken. Recovered, or been given. I glanced at Catherine. I recalled an angel in a dark place. The memory left me with a shiver. I took Catherine's dagger from the floor and stood. I left her where she lay, beside the crone I'd throttled. The door opened onto a corridor, one I recognized. The west corner. I knew where I was. I raised the knife to my lips and kissed the blade. Count Renner and the puppet master who pulled so many strings. One sharp edge would be enough for them all. Brother Rodat stabbed three men in the back for each one he faced. Rodat taught me all I knew about running and about hiding. Cowards should be treated with respect. Cowards best know how to hurt. Corner one, at your peril. Chapter 42.
Get out of my way. Who the hell? Please, jeez you. You're the same old wartbag that tried to stop me last time.
And he was. The stink that jumped me when he opened the door brought it all back.
I'm surprised my father let you live.
Who?
Who the hell am I? You don't recognize me.
You didn't last time either. I was shorter then. Yay high. I held out a hand to show him.
It seems like a while ago to me,
but you're an old man. And what are 3 or 4 years to the old? I sketched a bow. Prince Jorg at your service, or rather, you at mine. Last time I walked out of here with a band of outlaws. This time, I just need one night. If you please. Sir Makin of Trent.
I should call the guards on you, he said, without conviction.
Why? The king has issued no orders about me. That was a guess. But father thought he'd struck a mortal blow, so I was probably correct. Besides, it'd only get you killed. And if you're thinking of that big fellow with the pike, I rammed his head into the wall, not 3 minutes ago.
The jailer stepped back and let me pass, just as he had the time Lundis escorted me when I was a boy. On this occasion, I hit him as I went by, once in the stomach, and a second blow to the back of the neck as he doubled up. For a moment, I considered finishing the job with Catherine's knife. But it's good insurance to let ineffective jailers live. I took his keys and moved on down the corridor, knife at the ready. I'd rather have had my sword. I felt half-dressed without it. My mind kept returning to the fact of its absence, to the weightless sensation around my hip, like a tongue returning to an empty socket in constant overestimation of the loss. Makin put that sword in my hand on the day he found me. As captain of the guard in search of the heir, he had the right to bear it. I'd kept it close ever since, the family blade. Builder steel. I found my way to the torture chamber where I'd first met the Nuban. The table at the center lay empty. There were no faces at the cell door windows. I made a slow circuit, directing the beam of my lantern into each cell in turn. The first held a corpse,
or someone so near death as to be mere bones in a bag of skin. The next